In politics, when people talk about you, that's considered often to be a good thing. This past Thursday night, Donald Trump and the GOP experienced the painful exception to that rule. The January 6th Congressional Committee held their first of eight planned public hearings as high expectations hovered above them and opponents were certainly ready to pounce on them. Did the committee have the start that they needed? Will the middle and the end bring about more shockwaves? Joining us now to look back on round one is Professor Emeritus of Political Science at St. Peter's University, former Time Magazine senior reporter, Professor Alan Sanders. How are you today, Professor?
Very good, Chris. How are you?
Great to have you back here. stpeters.edu. Learn more about the educational opportunities at St. Peter's University. I guess the object of last night was the committee connecting to the people they were playing to. Was that a connection that was successful, do you think?
Well, I think they were playing to two audiences. One was the American people to lay out the basic evidence that they had gathered over the months of inquiry and investigation, and to lay out their assessment that this was a major assault on democracy. When all of the major advisors, including the most trusted advisors of the president, told him that you lost fair and square. And so that was the first part, a message to the American people as to what the president was told, what he knew, and how that led to the incitement of a right-wing mob to storm the Capitol on January the 6th. I think the second audience was the Justice Department, saying to the Justice Department, here is what we have uncovered, here is what we will lay out in detail in the coming weeks and days, and then over to you as to your assessment of what that means in terms of law enforcement.
Certainly when you have a presentation like this is going to be over, now seven more segments to go, seven more hearings to go, you don't want to start on the top of the mountain and go down. You want to have it escalate to a crescendo, I guess they would say in the music world, and a conclusion that leaves a lasting impact. So with last night being the starting gate, it boggles the mind what must be coming down in the next seven, with the next one being Monday at 10 a.m., next seven hearings.
Yeah, I mean, I think we got a little taste of what's coming. We had some snippets of interviews with Attorney General Barr, for instance, and with Ivanka Trump, and with some of the people in the Trump campaign. And we saw how, according to the clips, they told the president, you lost. There's no evidence of any fraud or systematic machinations that would have, destabilized the election or made an unfair election. You lost fair and square. I think what we're going to see in the coming days is more of those excerpts, more extended excerpts, and perhaps other witnesses that will be shown on tape and come before the committee to testify live. I think, if I understand correctly, for instance, Secretary of State Raffensperger from Georgia will come and testify live if all the indications are that it will happen. And, of course, that was another effort to subvert the election. I mean, the phone call, the so-called second perfect phone call yeah. of the president in which he says, find me the votes so that I can win the Georgia election. I mean, that's pretty damning, and I think we'll see more evidence that surrounds that phone call. Also understand that another person was involved in calling Georgia, and that was Senator Graham of South Carolina. He was also involved in calling the officials there. We don't know too much about those phone calls, but maybe the committee will tell us more about those phone calls. So I think what you're going to see is we got sort of a sneak preview of what is going to come down in the next few committee hearings, and I think we'll have more extended clips, and some of them, if we are to believe what the committee has previewed, will be pretty damning.
And as Liz Cheney pointed out, too, this, in spite of the claims, the asserting that, oh, this was all organic, it just happened, just built in the heat of the moment, Congresswoman Cheney specifically used the word planning, long-term plan, seven-part plan.
Yes. I mean, I think what she was trying to say there, and of course we have to see the actual evidence, is that, look, the effort to undermine, and that's what it was, the effort to undermine the legitimacy of this free and fair election was a multifaceted effort that lasted for weeks and months and involved many people, and it provoked, it incited, it inspired people to then culminate into a set of actions on January 6th that assaulted the Capitol and that put the lives of actual members of Congress at stake. I mean, we had people going through offices looking for Nancy Pelosi, looking for Vice President Pence, and saying in no uncertain terms that they wanted to assault him, or worse, with regard to Mike Pence, hang Mike Pence. I mean, when you've got a crowd shouting that, an emotional, impassioned crowd shouting that, that's very dangerous stuff. And so what the committee is saying, look, whether or not the president directly ordered this, and probably there is no evidence whatsoever that he directly ordered anything, what he did do in the months leading up to that is create a climate, provide inspiration for the people who actually launched that assault, which was a life-threatening assault, not just on the abstract concept of democracy, but a deadly assault on members of Congress and the police officers who protected them. And we know from a fact that several deaths resulted from the various events of January 6th.
In addition to lifelong injuries as well, we're talking with Professor Emeritus of Political Science at St. Peter's University and former Time Magazine senior reporter, Professor Alan Sanders, stpeters.edu. To learn more about St. Peter's University and listening to Issues and Ideas. You mentioned Mike Pence, and certainly he was Thursday night part of the conversation, no doubt will be over the next seven hearings. Was there anything from the first hearing? Do you think there'll be anything in the following hearings that will compel, inspire Mike Pence to come forward, testify, submit affidavit, and become a part of this in any way, shape, or form?
Well, I think we'll have testimony from his aides, and I think we'll have, testimony that indicates what the vice president was doing, his conversations with the president. I doubt very much that the former vice president himself will come and testify, because he's in the midst of an election campaign. He wants to run for the Republican nomination, and he knows that, he wants to separate himself from Donald Trump because that's important for him to do, but he also wants to align himself with Trump supporters. And so I don't think he wants to put himself in any perilous political situation in which he says things that might disrupt, because, when you come and become a live witnesses, you say things, the questions are asked, and you may say things that you later regret. So I think he wants to carefully calibrate how he wants to separate himself from President Trump, but at the same time seek the support of the supporters of President Trump. And I think he wants to do that on his own terms and not in the unscripted waters of a congressional hearing.
Between these two points, which do you think is the more monumental, the revelation that Representative Scott Perry and others sought pardons, which brings about the question, if you did nothing wrong with any connection to January 6th, why are you looking for pardons? Or was it what we learned from General Mark Milley and his conversations with Mark Meadows?
Well, I think both are rather troubling and bombshell kind of revelations. Certainly, you don't seek a pardon if you're a congressman unless you believe you've done something wrong and indeed something illegal. Now, I think Congressman Perry has denied that he sought pardons, and I suspect the other congressman, the unnamed congressman, will probably deny that. But if there is evidence, you can deny all you want in public, but if there's actual evidence that you did seek the pardon, then you've got a rather serious problem. Why are you seeking a pardon? If the evidence shows, that they did that. Regarding General Milley, I mean, the revelation, again, supports the notion that the president didn't do anything for something like 3 hours, knowing full well that people were assaulting members of Congress or seeking to assault members of Congress and seeking to subvert a lawful election, and he certainly knew that he had been arguing for months, despite all the evidence that was put in front of him, that he was perpetrating and spreading a lie, and then seeing how that culminates in an assault on democracy and endangering his own vice president and members of Congress and then doing nothing, that's a pretty strong indictment, regardless of whether any criminal laws were violated. I mean, what kind of a person watches an assault on democracy and an assault on people that he knows, his allies, as well as just general members of Congress, and then does nothing, and if anything, sends out messages and tweets that seek to support or sound like they're supporting the people who are conducting the assault? Again, regardless of any criminality that may or may not have been involved, what kind of a person does that?
Even at the urging of his own children to call off the dogs, and he refused to do that. And referencing back to Representative Perry, he wants to deny something charged by a committee that's interviewed 1,000 people. They have almost 150,000 records. I've seen people go against better odds than that. So good luck to him with that, if that's going to work out. And just real fast for 30 seconds, Professor, based on what we know just at this point, did Donald Trump violate his oath of office?
I should think so. I mean, the first priority of a president is to maintain law and order. In fact, he ran on law and order. He talked about it endlessly. And then to allow such an assault to occur without taking any action for 3 hours and sending out tweets and messages that could be interpreted as supportive of the ones who are breaking law and order, I think that's very serious. That's very politically serious. And it, again, reveals what kind of a person he is and indicates the danger that he poses to those who truly and fully believe in law and order.
He's Professor Emeritus of Political Science at St. Peter's University, on the web there at stpeters.edu. He's also former Time Magazine senior reporter. Professor Alan Sanders, thank you so much for your insight today.
My pleasure, Chris. Take care.